How many of you out there are afraid to fly? Do you get anxious about getting on an airplane? I'm delighted to have as my guest Dr. Martin Seif, PhD. He is board certified in cognitive behavioral therapy and a pioneer in the modern treatment of anxiety disorders. He's one of the 7 original founders of the Anxiety Disorders Association of America and a nationally known expert on the fear of flying. He is the creator and leader of Freedom to Fly, a six-week group-based airport program he created 13 years ago to help people who are afraid of flying. It is offered through the Anxiety and Treatment Center and Phobia Treatment Center at White Plains Hospital in New York, where Dr. Seif is the associate director. He is also the author of What Every Therapist Needs to Know About Anxiety Disorders. Dr. Seif, welcome to Dr. Radio.
Well, thank you. Very nice to be here.
Okay, so first of all, tell me how you got interested in this area.
Well, I got interested in phobias specifically because of my own. I sort of took this opportunity to try to cure myself. But I was specifically interested in fear of flying because I didn't fly until I was in my late 20s because of my own particular anxieties. And it's a very difficult phobia to overcome. So I created a program that I thought would be necessary for people to... That included the elements that were necessary for people to be able to overcome the fear. It's a complicated fear, it's a complex fear, and it's sometimes hard for people to get the courage to actually walk onto the plane.
Yeah, you know, it's really intriguing to me. I mean, we hear all the statistics. You know, walk in Manhattan, walk into the middle of the street and get hit by flying debris from a building, get in a car accident, get hit by a bicycle, train, but somehow, you know, and flying statistically so much safer, and yet somehow it's more anxiety producing. So,
well, you know, you're actually mentioning things that sort of go to the heart of what you have to do to try to help people who overcome a fear of flying. And basically what I say to people when I start to see them, actually, look, why don't I tell you a little bit about the program that I have,
fine,
and then I'll kind
great.
Of explain sort of some of the elements that I consider essential for it. First of all, the program that I run, and as you mentioned, is through the White Plains Anxiety and Phobia Treatment Center. Although I run all the groups, there are six groups. After the fifth group meeting, we take a shuttle flight either to Boston and Washington and back. You know, we go both ways. And although I lead the groups, I have a great deal of help. There are 4 paraprofessional therapists who assist me working with patients. The coordination work which is enormous, is done by the coordinator of the Anxiety and Phobia Treatment Center, Judy Chessa. We have a contact person at the airport, Judith Alicia, who does a great deal of work. We actually get a lot of cooperation from TSA, those people that people love to hate, but they actually are very nice to us because we go through security to go to the other side of the airport and actually to board stationary planes, and they are extremely cooperative with us, and that takes a lot of, I don't even know how they do it. And then currently for the last several years, we have had JetBlue has provided us with a stationary airplane when it
You're
comes
kidding.
In, and we and huh. and after the plane disembarks, we are escorted onto the plane, so people actually get the opportunity to be on the plane. Some people have never been through security; that means that they haven't flown since 9/11, and many people haven't been on planes for a long time. And I just want to correct one of the things that you mentioned during the introduction. The program has actually been going for 17 years.
Yeah, what I thought it was been around a long time.
Well,
yeah.
The reason I mention that, the numbers aren't that important. We actually started prior to 9/11.
Yeah.
So the security requirements were extremely different at that time.
Right, when, you just went on the plane.
Right, well, almost that. So when after 9/11, we thought, well, this is the end of the program. But I give credit to White Plains Airport, which is an airport in the suburb of Westchester Airport. It's on the border between Greenwich, Connecticut, and White Plains, and TSA, who has actually figured out a way to give people that you need a boarding pass in order to go through TSA. So they figure out some way to do it. People get boarding passes. They're checked for security as if they were going to take a flight. So that's
can I just ask you,
sure.
is it worse since 9/11? I mean, are there
worse.
The fear of flying? I mean, there was
a temporary increase, but even the group that I led, I lead this group a couple times a year, and even the group that I led right after 9/11 they understood that 9/11 for them was not an enormous change. Okay, there is not a huge amount of fear of terrorism, although it could be that some people just wouldn't at this point, or initially weren't willing to even go on a plane and go on a program to overcome their fear. But most people recognize that the fear of terrorism is not a major issue for them, okay, for these particular people that we see. So I would say that it's been something of a change, but not nearly as much as you would expect. I think the average person who didn't really think about these things might think about them and become more concerned about them. But you have to realize the people who come to our program are part of the diehard either flight avoiders or really white knuckle, you know, flyers who basically do it just to kind of manage to get over it. So to get through the flight or get where they have to do. So it actually wasn't as significant in the group of people that I see. Okay. But one of the things what you do, you mentioned something earlier on that we know the statistics, and yet somehow fear of flying tends to trigger so much more fear in many of us, not all of us, but in many of us than something that actually might be equally dangerous or even more dangerous. So part of what I do is, and I would say this to anyone, is you have to understand what a phobia is. It goes back to the basis of phobias. Phobia is a fear that is out of proportion to the danger. It's not an irrational fear. It's not a crazy fear. It's out of proportion to the danger. And it has to be great enough so that
it interferes.
Exactly. You avoid contact with the source. So what I would do to someone is say, how many people, I run the groups that I run, I see people individually, but I also run these groups. And in 16 or 17 years, I've seen probably 1,000 people or so. So I will often say, I'll start out by saying, look, how many people believe the statistics that it's safe to drive from here to Boston, but it's actually safer to fly from here to Boston? And most people, everybody raised their hands. There are very few people who feel that the statistics are a scam. They know that. And then I'll say, we're at an airport. How many of you are willing to fly with me to Boston right now? And no one raises their hand. How many people are willing to drive with me to Boston right now? They raise their hand. Little do they know what boring company I'm going to be on the flight, but on the drive. But so we start with the assumption that we are not logical people. As I say, if we were logical people, then we would be most afraid of things that are most dangerous and least afraid of things that are least dangerous. But we're not. That's not the way it works. There's our brain and our mental capacity is sort of structured in different ways, and that's the reason I'm in business. You know, because that's the way we are.
Okay, I'm just going to do a little reintro for people who are just tuning in to us. So, folks out there, you're listening to Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, an associate professor of psychiatry and neurology, and my guest is Dr. Martin Seif, who is board certified in cognitive behavioral therapy and a pioneer in the modern treatment of anxiety disorders, and specifically the creator and leader of a Freedom to Fly program. So our phone lines are open and we'd love to hear from you. Are you afraid to fly? Do you get anxious just thinking about flying? Do you take buses or trains because you don't want to? What's worse for you, turbulence, claustrophobia? Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So, Martin, why don't you just take us through exactly the elements of the program that you run?
Right. Well, the elements of the program are very much related to the phenomenon that people present to us. So let me just introduce that a little bit. People talk about having a fear of flying, which is sort of a misnomer. The best way to think about it is that people have fears of flying, because what we call fear of flying, is really a confluence of a variety of different phobias and anxieties that people have. You think of the flying experience sort of as a perfect storm. So if there are a group of 22 people in a group, let's just talk people in general. People have a bunch of different fears that they define as being afraid of flying. By far, the greatest percentage of people who are afraid of flying will identify themselves as claustrophobic. They know exactly who they are. These are the people who say, I would have no problem flying if the plane, if I could just ask the pilot to land whenever I felt like I needed to kind of go out and stretch my legs and, you know, get some fresh air. They're claustrophobic. From a more technical point of view, they may not really be claustrophobic. It may not make that much difference to them, but they actually are suffering from some aspect of panic disorder, and they define it as claustrophobic. They're confined, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The second largest group of people, by far, are the people who don't like the fact that it's so high. And they just don't like, it freaks them out, the thought of flying so high. And they know who they are. And lots of them will say, I wouldn't mind flying if we could just sort of fly maybe at sort of treetop height, you know, just enough to get over the place. They don't, that's what bothers them a great deal. So if we combine those two groups of people, we probably have 75 to 85% of all the people who come who are afraid of flying. However, many people have more than one fear in terms of flying, because flying, you know, presents such a kind of fertile atmosphere or environment. There's so many different triggers that can trigger people up. And so if there's a group of 22 people and I start to put down a list of what the fears that people have, they'll talk about claustrophobic, they'll talk about acrophobic, the fear of being too high. They'll talk about turbulence, fear of turbulence. They'll talk about being too far away from home. Lots of people have what we would call obsessive fears or downright obsessive-compulsive disorder. The old phrase, I'm a germophobic, now would be redefined as a form of obsessive-compulsive. I don't like the idea that I'm breathing in the air. Lots of people have what they consider to be odd or particular allergies, and that's a variety of OCD. Lots of people have what would be technically defined as a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder, which has a bunch of different components, but the big thing that everybody can recognize is their worry warts, and they worry to the point of actually beginning to panic, and they worry everything from the condition of the plane to will people be fine without them, will they survive the flight, will the food be okay, will they throw up on the plane, will it be too bumpy for them.
Okay, you know,
so I'm going to stop, but the list is very long.
I'm sure it is. And you know what? We have a lot of people calling in.
Okay.
So let's get to them with some real-life experiences. I'd like to welcome Susan from Canada. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Hello.
Hello, Susan. You're on Dr. Radio.
Me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a son who is 14, and we cannot get him on a plane. He has a fear of terrorism attacks. And I'm just not sure how to handle it.
Okay, I didn't hear. Who is this person?
It's her son, who's 14.
Your son is how old?
14.
14.
Right.
And he has been on a plane. And we had an incident going through security. And he ended up having an anxiety attack. And I was able to get him on that flight at home, and that's it. Now, I try to have him avoid, he likes to watch documentaries. And I've caught him on occasion watching documentaries of 9/11. And I don't know if it's that heightened his awareness or his anxieties towards airplanes, but he will just not get on an airplane.
Well, first of all, I want to let you know that you're not alone. It's a very frustrating experience. There are a lot of parents or family members who say, we'd like to be able to travel, or we live in a place that's perhaps rural, and the only practical way to get from one place to another is by an airplane. And now we find that one or more of our children is just refusing to fly. I'd make a couple of points here. There is a large genetic biological component to all anxiety disorders. So you might want to say, is it you or your husband? Is it the mother or the father that the son has inherited the capacity to feel this way? And there's also a maturational component. So the idea of worries, which it, this is, sounds like, it sounds like a kind of thought that gets stuck in his mind, which we would all either call a particular type of worry or an obsessive fear, but that's just sort of the technical way of looking at it, often starts early on in a person's life. It can start with boys. It could start at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It's not uncommon where you get this thought stuck in your mind and it becomes terrifying to you some way. And that might be the issue that he's going through at this point. The key that a good therapist would try to work with, even with a 14-year-old, is to recognize the fact that he's actually afraid of a certain thought. And this sort of veers on the idea of people who worry a lot and maybe sort of a little OCD-ish, where you become very frightened by a particular thought. And the notion of trying to keep him away from something generally misfires. Let me explain to that. In a sense, the active ingredient for overcoming any anxiety is exposure. Now, exposure properly done really should be done the right way, and you want to do it in a way that sort of doesn't freak a person out but allows them to become less frightened as a result of the exposure. But usually, I say to patients, allow yourself to watch anything that seems factual in some way. If you find yourself going over something again and again and again, you have to understand, are you doing this because it's a kind of sort of obsessive fear that you're trying to, you look at it, you gain something, and you try to figure out how to get away from it in some way, or are you doing it because it actually helps you feel less reactive to the situation? That's the general rule that I can say with that. One other thing, what does he say he would do in order to fly? What's his input into it? He's a 14-year-old. 14-year-olds are pretty able to participate in their own treatment now.
We've tried to suggest short flights, something at the other end where there would actually be like a reward, something
sure.
He'd really want to do.
Yeah.
Now, I just came...
If you say to him, well, what would you need, or under what conditions would you be willing to take a flight? Short, reward, what sort of things would you say?
In some cases, he will say, okay, if we fly out of such and such an airport...
I would always start with what he seems willing to do. Let me explain to you. One of the things that never gets mentioned in all the books and all the treatment plans is that it takes a huge amount of courage to overcome this fear. The fear may be a false fear, but it feels raw, it feels real. And so let me tell you, one of the most common comments I get from patients after they take their first flight with the group, they'll say to me, Dr. Seif, when I was walking down the jet port to the plane, I actually felt like I was walking to my own funeral. So there is no way to get through this without experiencing some fear. So whatever he says is willing to do, do it, okay? And just the experience of doing it, even if it's an uncomfortable flight for him, continue to do that, because all the research suggests that that's the way people eventually overcome their fears. So I would start with what he seems willing to do and proceed in manageable steps from there.
That sounds good.
Okay.
I do know it's a real fear, and I do know when you said about being a genetic component.
Absolutely.
I totally agree.
That's right.
My mother also will not fly.
Yeah. So he gets it legitimately, and start from where he is. Let him know that he has a long life ahead of him and he's going to want to be able to fly, but do it in manageable steps.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Susan. That was a really good example for us, and I completely agree with what Dr. Seif was saying about, you know, the sort of the behavioral desensitization, and you start at sort of the lowest level, you know, could he do?
Well, it's not necessarily the lowest level. It's what a person feels is manageable. There, in the old style, you would start, people would create hierarchies.
Right.
And they would start at the lowest level and work their way up. Over the last 10 years or so, the concept of what we call hierarchies has been pretty much abandoned in a certain way, because very often people feel, you know, I can do this even though it seems harder, but I can't do that even though it seems easier, and that's fine. It's absolutely fine to do that, okay? So you don't need hierarchies. You just ask the person, what do you think you can do? What seems manageable for you?
Thank you, Susan. And just a quick reminder for those of you just joining us that we're talking about fear of flying and fearful flyers with Dr. Martin Seif, who is a board-certified cognitive behavioral therapist and the creator and leader of Freedom to Fly, a group program to help desensitize people from their fears. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So let's take Chris from New York. Welcome to Dr. Radio.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is a little different. I'm actually fine with flying. I'm fine with it. However, I have anxiety of thinking of taking my small children on the plane. We're supposed to be going to a wedding, and I've already had a dream about it. My son is 2, and he is, I can't even keep him, like, in a seat in our house.
Okay, and actually not that unusual. You want to say more?
Yeah, I mean, my girlfriend was like, have a cocktail, and I said, and then you'll be fine. I said, that's the biggest buzzkill. I would never want to do that. Like that wouldn't help. That's horrible.
Well, because the notion is you have to be very alert to take care of your kids if there's any disaster, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and
so,
just keeping him quiet or not sitting on a plane or in his seat. I just don't even see how it's possible.
Well, let me ask you a couple of things because you just gave me some more information. In general, worry-based anxiety disorders, which I describe as people who are kind of worry warts, people who are on the OCD side, often fear less for themselves and are more concerned about other people that they love. Okay? So I don't know, we don't have to get into great detail here, but I don't know if that fits you. Okay, that's the first thing that I would think of. The second thing which you just mentioned, and you gave me another idea, because there, remember, we're talking about fear of flying being this sort of, this perfect storm for triggers. And so people with social anxieties also do not fear flying because they're afraid that they are going to become anxious. And because of their people who are so close to them, other people are going to notice their fear, and that makes them even more anxious. We define social anxiety as hypersensitivity to real or imagined criticism. So the question is whether it seems to you that people will think of you as being a bad mother because your kids are running around or making too much sound or you feel critical. So those are the two issues that need to be addressed, potentially addressed. So those are the two things that come to my mind when you talk about the concern that you have. So think of yourself. Are you a kind of worry-based OCD type person, or are you a social anxiety person? And if you say neither, then we haven't made much progress on it, but probably one or both of those things. Any of those make sense to you?
Not so much. I mean, maybe the first one a little bit.
Okay, so people who are worry-based or are OCD-ish, it's not uncommon for them to say, I'm less afraid for myself. I don't want my husband to fly. I don't want other people to fly. I don't want my children to fly. That's the concern that I have, that something will happen to them. And the fact that for you, the idea of taking a drink makes you feel the opposite of what you do. You want to be alert. You want to feel that if there's some sense of, if you're needed in some way, that you are available for that person.
I try to put my son in his car seat. He's 2, and all he wants to do is run around. He cries when I just put him in a car seat. I just don't see how he's going to do 6 hours.
So that, you know,
you one more thing. Have you flown with your kids?
Not my younger one, my older one, and he was fine.
Okay, so here's the point. We didn't even mention it yet in this program, but a huge component of flying is what we call anticipatory anxiety, which is imagining what the flight will be. And anticipatory anxiety is a very funny animal. I could spend a lot of time talking about it. But one of the things to recognize is that it always feels like it's a rehearsal of what's going to happen. In fact, it's a quite different phenomena. It's actually a subgrouping of worry-type phenomena because it's triggered entirely by thoughts in your mind about what if this happens or what if that happens, where you imagine some scenario. And then
that's
you feel
exactly
where,
it. That's
right.
What I'm doing.
Okay, so that's a very common phenomenon. And in fact, one of the things I can tell you is, which you're just going to have to take my word for it, is that anticipatory anxiety is not an accurate indicator of what you're going to feel like when you're on the plane. And, in fact, the vast majority of time, 95% of the time, the anticipatory anxiety is much greater than the anxiety you feel on the plane. And what I tell people that I work with is if you kind of get a good sense of what anxiety is about, understand it, and begin to look at it a different way, by the time your plane is on level flight, you will have already experienced at least 75% of the anxiety of the round-trip flight. This is like a round-trip flight to Boston, where we fly, wait for 2 hours, and come back. Because the majority of the anxiety that you have is imagining how bad it's going to be when you're on the plane. Anticipatory anxiety is a very difficult phenomenon. And the idea of, you know, if you're afraid of taking a shower, you know, you can turn your shower in, you can turn your shower on and put your foot in and say, okay, that's enough, and then take your foot out. With flying, there's a kind of all-or-nothing phenomenon that goes on. You know, you're not going to say as the plane is taking off, I think I've had enough, so let's land it now. So that's part of what exacerbates the concept of anticipatory anxiety. It's the biggest fear with flying, and it's one that just about everyone can identify with.
I have a question. I don't know if this will be helpful for Chris Martin, but do you have any advice? And this isn't, it's a little bit different than fear of flying per se, but what about a parent who's worried about a slightly overactive child? I mean, my sense is kids between 2 and 4, you know, they're the ones that want to run around on the plane. Do you have any advice for them about ways to help manage those little kids?
About managing little kids?
Yeah.
Very little. What I can say is that I see people, you know, I'm such a specialist, you know, but here, many of my anxious patients love it when their kids are active because they're focused on the moment trying to take care of their kids, okay? I think in the newer regulations, don't they require children to be into car seats?
Over two, I think it's required. Under two, it's not.
You know, and the idea is very often if you're flying on a vacation, there are lots of parents and grandparents who, number one, understand the fact that kids are going to run around, and number two, are so relieved that it's not their own. You know? Okay. That's just a fact of life.
That's true. You know? That's true. But, maybe this isn't fair, Chris. I mean, I just... I just flew back, you know, it's vacation week, and there are a lot of kids, and,
you know,
there were people behind me, and... You know, one baby was screaming as the plane was getting ready. But you know what? They all simmered down. I mean, you know, I've actually, my experience has been with lots of kids on flights. There may be something going on sort of in the beginning, but somehow they do acclimatize and, you know, you can run up and down the aisle.
Now, Carol, I just want to point to you from a technical point of view, what you're doing is you're giving some reassurance, which soothes you a bit for a while. You know, then from a technical point of view, it then, in a long term, it reinforces the anticipatory anxiety because that's sort of what you do. So soothing is good, comfort is good, reassurance is good, but listen, you're going to feel anticipatory anxiety before the flight. Do you have a flight set up?
No, I haven't gotten it yet.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's hard for me to, like, want to take him.
Yeah, and what I tell, I don't know what your situation is, but if you have some place to go, I recommend that people do it as quickly as possible because anticipatory anxiety is essentially fueled by the internal debate that says, should I or shouldn't I?
No, I would agree about that,
yeah.
And I think you,
no,
you, I,
get
you, know, I think you
ought
to,
anyway.
I think you ought to do it. Well, I want to thank you, Chris. Good luck. Book that flight. Take that kid. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein. I'm talking with Dr. Martin Seif about fear of flying. He's going to stay with us for our next segment, so stick around. You can hear me every Tuesday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, repeated 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. So let's keep those calls coming in. We'll be back in a few minutes.
I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky.
I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, an associate professor of psychiatry and neurology and vice chair for education in the Department of Psychiatry here at NYU. And if you are in the Twitterverse and want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at NYU Docs to find out the topics we're discussing on each show as we're discussing them. And of course, Why are we here? The whole purpose of Dr. Radio is to provide the listening audience out there, that's you, the public, with access to experts in the field of medicine who can answer your questions, respond to your comments, all of that. So remember that our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us, satdocs@SiriusXM.com. So we've been talking about fear of flying and fearful flyers and how to overcome these anxieties. My guest is Dr. Morton Seif, PhD. He is board certified in CBT, that's cognitive behavioral therapy, and a pioneer in the modern treatment of anxiety disorders, as well as one of the original founders of the Anxiety Disorders Associations of America. Dr. Seif is a nationally known expert in fear of flying, and he is the creator and leader of Freedom to Fly, a six-week group airport-based program he created to help feel fearful flyers. So welcome back, Morton. We're delighted to have you here on Dr. Radio.
Very nice to be here.
And I'm going to ask you about an email that we got, which, and I don't know all the context, so we're going to assume here. The email is, we lost people on 9/11. Presumably this is perhaps a family member or a friend of someone who died then. How do you get a teen with generalized anxiety disorder on a plane now? So here we're talking about a very specific circumstance, perhaps, of a family member, and we know that there were a lot, this may have been someone who was born around that time. What do you do for a teenager who has that, knows there's someone in the family who died during 9/11?
Well, let me just sort of differentiate a bunch of things, and this is not an uncommon issue that people have. There are such things as traumatic phobias, and those are people who develop prolonged phobias as a result of a traumatic incident, okay? And it sort of has a similarity in certain ways to post-traumatic stress disorder, but we're going to call them traumatic phobias. These are very rare, very rare. People do not develop the fear of dogs because they were bitten by a dog when they were young. People don't develop fears because of any particular single event. As a rule, occasionally they're traumatized and they develop it, but I can tell you that I've seen really thousands of people with phobias and maybe a half a dozen people who have what I would consider to be traumatic phobias. So I'm trying to make a differentiation. So what we're having now is that it's possible that this person who probably was not born when 9/11 happened, that maybe the parent is conflating several different issues, and maybe it's best to look at this person, this teen's fear of flying, as a separate entity. Let me give you an example. There was a person who came to me who had a history of, actually a family member was killed in the Lockerbie plane where there was a bomb exploded and the plane crashed. And then the same individual literally was across the street at ground zero when the planes hit.
Oh,
and she
God.
Watched the buildings come down. She stopped flying.
Yeah.
And in fact, she thought that she was traumatized. But when I started talking to her, it became clear to me that there was a family history of anxiety. There were certain transitions going in her life at that time. And there was also certain maturational points. She was of a certain age where it became pretty clear to me that even without these phenomena, she had a fairly high probability of developing a fear of flying. Because remember, there's a huge genetic component, there's a maturational component having to do with when certain types of anxieties develop. And in fact, I took a flight with her and did a little work with her, and she became a comfortable flyer after that, So there was really no traumatic element, although she really, in her mind, put it together. It was a very, from my perspective, ordinary type of fear of flying. So when we look at this teen who refuses to fly, it probably would make more sense to just say, to what extent is there a genetic component, because that's always kind of important for people to realize, And again, teens generally develop, there are certain types of fears that develop early. Social anxiety disorder tends to develop very early, where people can get panicky feelings at the age of 11 or 12 or 13, okay? And that's the fear of people noticing them in some way. So it would be important to get an idea of what this person fears and proceed from that point. There are actually fairly effective means of treatment of almost all types of anxiety disorders.
Well, let me shift gears a little bit, because this is another, it's another email from an anonymous anxious flyer, which relates
flyer
to some of
flyer?
You.
Flyer. Okay.
If you only fly about once a year, is taking Xanax problematic? Will you develop a resistance to it or a dependency? So what is your approach about?
I'm not a medical doctor.
I know that.
Let's just talk about the practical aspects of it. If you say that fear, that the active ingredient for overcoming any anxiety, and certainly flying, is exposure, and you fly once a year, that's not enough exposure.
Right.
Since most of anxiety related to flying is anticipatory anxiety, the minor tranquilizers like Xanax or Clonopin or Valium or Ativan, all those, are pretty good at reducing anticipatory anxiety. The problem is that there are some people who are control freaks who don't like to feel, they don't like the loss of control that they feel when they take a minor tranquilizer. So I recommend everybody to try it one day when you have nothing to do to see if you feel okay. There are some people who are very anxious who don't like the idea of having a glass of wine because it makes them feel too lightheaded and they feel too out of control. If, in fact, it works for this person, then here's what I would suggest. Xanax is not my favorite medication because it has a short half-life. I prefer something like Valium or Clonopin, but that's really kind of based on the doctor that prescribes it. Take it about an hour and a half before the plane is to take off because you're really trying to deal with the anticipatory anxiety. However, realize that it's a double-edged sword. The benefits of exposure is essentially a learning experience. And when you take a minor tranquilizer, it interferes with short-term memory. That's just a known fact. So it's a little bit like saying, I'm going to drink half a bottle of wine, and then I'm going to study for my exam tomorrow. Okay? You learn less, so you get less benefits from exposure. So the problem is that so you want a kind of way which is better for you. But by all means, taking a minor tranquilizer twice a year does not habituate you to the medication under any circumstances. You're the medical person. I'm sure you can back me up on that.
No, that's completely true.
Do not worry about that. There was in the British Journal of Medicine a couple of years ago an article saying that any use of a benzo can lead to increased risk of dementia. I noticed that just this year they published an article which basically said that now we're not sure about this. You know, maybe there were some methodological issues that were problematic with this particular.
No, you're right. I mean, an occasional use of an anti-anxiety drug is not going to do it.
But I would ask the person to try it out beforehand, and that's the way a lot of people do it.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, the way to overcome this kind of anxiety is just to do it and to fly, and that if you dope yourself up, the learning will be less.
Well, let me give you a very extreme example, because we've seen a lot of people. There's one person who is actually a professional athlete, and this person flew 50 times a year, completely got drugged up each time, had to fly a day early.
So that he wasn't drugged up when he did his athletics.
No, he had to fly there a day early in order to recover.
Right.
And never got over the fear of flying because each time he got completely drugged up.
Yeah.
So he gradually reduced this and now flies comfortably without any medication.
Yeah, seems much better. Okay, folks, for those of you just joining us, I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, an associate professor of psychiatry and neurology here at NYU. We are talking about fear of flying and related disorders. My guest is Dr. Martin Seif, PhD. He's board certified in cognitive behavioral therapy and a pioneer in the modern treatment of anxiety disorders. So if you or your loved one have suffered from fear of flying or other types of anxieties, this is your opportunity to speak with an expert in the field. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-NYU-DOCS. 698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So, okay, Martin, what if you're not a fearful flyer, but the person next to you seems anxious? What can you do as a fellow flyer to help?
Well, you can do a lot depending on how much effort you're willing to put into it. First of all, there are a group of people, and people who are not fearful flyers do not have to be afraid of this, who or be embarrassed about this, who essentially would want to move away from someone who's having a hard time on a plane. I can tell you that sometimes, you know, our group loads, you know, our group, we do a group flight. It's part of a regular, ordinary shuttle flight, say, to Boston. And so
oh, so you're on a regular
we're
flight.
We're on a regular
yeah,
flight.
Yeah,
when 20 of us, 25, 26, 27, with assistance, when fearful flyers get on, other people notice it, plus the pilot, you know, announces it. And and there are some people who say, I want to sit as far away from this group as possible. Now, at one time, there was, at one point, a well-known playwright who, when she sat down, I said, you're going to be next to a group of fearful flyers. And she said, oh, that's great. I really want to know what to do with my friends who are fearful flyers. And she actually loved the idea of sort of sitting in the group. But here's what you want to do in general. Number one, believe it or not, you may not know that the person next to you is fearful, because most of the time people hold on. You know, people with anxiety tend to be over-controlled people. So a lot of times you won't even notice it, okay? That's number one. Number two, if someone is actually having a difficult time in some way, you have to be kind of very cautious about offering any help, because part of the time they are afraid of being noticed, okay? And so actually making the offer in some way, you know, might increase their anxiety. But if a person is asking the flight attendant, is it going to be an easy flight? Is it going to be a bumpy flight? What does that bell ring? If they're sort of breathing hard and sort of gripping the seat, you know, and sort of embedding their fingers into the, you know, the armrest of the seat, you know, you can lean over and point out to them that a lot of people are nervous. You know, you can be nervous and you're still safe. It's a very safe way of doing it. And just remind them of sort of what the factual, you know, what the facts are. The facts are that flying is safe, that they may feel frightened, that maybe they're anxious, that anything that you do that allows them to focus on the present is going to be therapeutic. When a person is anxious, they are completely mentally involved in what-if future thoughts. And these what-if thoughts are not pleasant thoughts. People are not saying, what if I find, what if I win the lottery? What if I find a bag next to me with $3 million in unmarked bills that I can keep? Those are not the what-if thoughts that are going through their mind. They are thinking, what if I can't tolerate this anymore? What if the wing falls off? What if the plane gets rougher? What if I make a fool of myself? What if I have a heart attack? What if I start panicking here? So every what-if thought, okay, projects the person into the future. And to the extent that you can bring a person back to the present, what we might say, to the extent that you can allow a person to focus on what is rather than what if, then you are helping a person come back to the present and allow their body to start to calm down, which it actually wants to do. But inadvertently, people are actually, despite their best efforts, they're making themselves stay anxious. So if you connect to them in a moment-to-moment basis and say, tell me about yourself, I can tell you about myself. Where are you going? What are you doing? Anything that is kind of ordinary and focused on the present is going to help that person. One more thing. Anything that involves the senses in a way that feels pleasant also tends to help a person feel anxious. So anything that looks good, sounds good, feels good, tastes good, or smells good, will allow a person to stay more involved in the present, and that allows them to calm down and to feel less anxious.
Very good suggestions. Well, we have an email from Renee. My daughter is 21 and has flown all her life. She's been to Europe several times, Mexico several times, as well as all over the U.S. Last June, She could not get on a plane to fly home to Houston from New York City. She had a panic attack and got off the plane before takeoff. She ultimately took a train home and has not flown since.
Yes. Yeah.
A month ago, she and I tried to take a 45-minute flight from Houston to Dallas, and she had to deplane. What can we do to help her?
Okay, first of all, this is common. This is the typical way that people develop fears. And what you find is that people become bewildered by this. In other words, first panic, first panic has a median onset age of about 23. So somewhere between 18 and 30 is the time where most people develop first panics, okay? The fact that this young woman realized that she was panicking on the plane makes me think that this is not the first panic attack that she's had, okay? Because most people, when they get a first panic, they think that there's something physically wrong.
Like that they're dying, yeah.
They're having a heart attack or getting a stroke, and if they don't run to the hospital, then they want to run to the hospital. So if you say, I'm having a panic attack, that shows that there's some evidence beforehand. So what you want to do, so this is very, very common. And I would also, I don't want to overemphasize it, but if the mother says, look on her side or the father's side to say, is there a history of panic disorder or panic attacks in this family? So what you want to do is, there's very standard treatment for panic. Let me tell you just a little bit of panic. Panic is, without any of the psychobabble, it's a fear of the fear. It's a fear that the fear will mushroom. It's a sense that the fear is intolerable. And in fact, one big issue today in the treatment and study of anxiety disorders is a term called anxiety sensitivity, which is just a fancy way of saying, and it's inheritable, a heritable trait, anxiety sensitivity. It's a fancy way of saying, I have a fear of fear, I spend a lot of energy trying to avoid these things, and I worry about these things a great deal. So the sense of being afraid of the fear is what makes it feel intolerable. And there are lots of treatments for that. So if I would suggest that this person work a little bit more on helping her daughter overcome the fear of fear. And there are a lot of really good workbooks on this. One of the ones is by a guy named David Carbonell. I just think it's very good. The name slips my mind, but I think it has something to do with the panic attack workbooks. I wish I remembered the name right now. But there are a lot of really good self-help books on helping a person overcome panic. This one by David Carbonell, I think, is particularly good. When she's ready, she would start to take a flight. But that would be something that she wouldn't necessarily be the first step, because other triggers might trigger the sphere of fear also. Okay, it's unusual where a person says the only thing that creates this particular reaction to me is the airplane. Okay.
So, what you're implying here, and I think you may be right, is that given that she's flown all the time, and this is an abrupt onset of something, then it's probably more panic disorder, and the fear
most
of flying is
fear of fly. No,
is
most people have fear of flying. It's a variation of
panic disorder.
I would say 75 to 80% of them are a variation of panic disorder. Almost everyone realizes that they're afraid of experiencing a panic on the plane. The triggers can be different, but the internal reaction is very similar for almost everyone who's afraid of flying.
Okay. Quickly, we'll take Roberta from South Carolina. You're on Dr. Radio. We only have about a minute or two left. So quickly, what's your question?
Well, yes, I have a fear of the fear. I guess that's the best way to put it.
And you're not alone. You have a lot of other people who have a fear of fear. Okay, and that's exactly a good way of describing it.
Yes, I'm 60 now, but in my 30s, I had quite a few panic attacks after having my first child. But I got that under control, and it seems like lately, yeah, I'm having social anxiety. So the doctor put me on Klonopin because the social anxiety got so bad, and I had a buzzing, vibrating feeling going on in my body. It was like an internal vibrating in my legs.
there are lots of odd sensations that go along with high levels of anxiety. Again, I'm not a medical doctor, but usually going on a benzodiazepine, which is clonopin, for long periods of time is not the best medical treatment for the sort of anxiety that you have. Benzodiazepines are usually good for, if you're going to take them, I don't know if the doctor told you to take them every day or just take them whenever you need to do it, but usually after a maximum of 6 weeks, you don't want to take them every day any longer because you basically start to become kind of used to them or habituated to them.
Yeah.
And it's not the best sort of
thing. I've done it for a year now.
Yeah, so you probably want to maybe get a different, if you're willing to go, maybe get a different opinion and see if there's some other medication that you can take. Although, you know, I'm just telling you, I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm giving you the general standard advice that would be given to anyone in your position. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And unfortunately, we're really out of time.
Okay.
Roberta, I want to thank you for your question. I agree with the recommendation to have a conversation with your doctor about whether you need to stay on this or whether there's other treatments. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Martin Seep, who is an expert in fear of flying. You can go visit his website, freedomtoflynow.com.
Can I mention another website?
Yeah, sure.
It's drmartinseif.com. That's the best website.
Okay, Dr. Martin Seif, S-E-I-F, right?
Yes,
drmartinseif.com for more information. Thank you so much for having been on the show, Martin. I'd also like to thank my producer, Melanie Crone, my soundboard engineer, Andrew Marcello, our program director, Maurice Tunick. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, and I will see you next week on the radio.